Welcome to the first episode of Thirst for Knowledge. This is a bi-weekly, multi-format podcast devoted to all things magic. Each episode, we'll be taking a favorite deck of ours and breaking it down and taking a look at it. But right now, we're right in the middle of spoiler season, so let's get into some spoilers. My name's Ricky, and with me I have...
William.
My name's John. I'm sorry that my friend William has nothing other to say than his name.
That's all you need to know.
It's just William.
I'm pretty much the best Magic player here, so, you know, I won't talk a lot. I'll just make
Jesus
sure.
Jesus Christ, are we starting this already, William?
Already.
So Willie's here just to keep us straight?
Yep, that's what I'm here for. Telling you when you're wrong.
Oh, yeah. All right, so first off, let's get into some recent news. We have some match results for some SCG events.
Do we? Do we have those?
We do. The SCG Open in Minneapolis got taken down by Jeskai Delver, being potted by Anthony Lean. It was essentially just a Stoneblade deck.
Yeah, it was pretty standard blue-white-red Delver list.
This deck does have three Treasure Crews in it, though, which
Yes, that's the new tech.
Of the top eight decks, there was seven Treasure Crews in there. There was four in the eighth place list and three here.
What do you guys think about Treasure Crews? I love the card.
I love the card
also. I love drawing three cards.
For one mana, right.
One mana.
This card will not be in Modern and Standard for very long. Nah. I think everybody else has said that in the world, but they really fucked up on that card.
Do you think it's strong enough to actually get banned out of Standard, though?
No.
Yes.
I don't think so.
No, not in Standard. I was wrong saying that, but definitely in Modern.
I don't know. I think you'll just start seeing a lot more main deck, like Splash, Graveyard Hate, like, you don't have Deathrite Shaman, but you have Relic of Progenitus, that's what I was trying to say. You'll start seeing those, like, main board. I already play them main deck and fish, play one main deck, so I think you'll see some Splash, Graveyard Hate, and maybe, Rest in Peace whenever you can swing it.
I mean, yeah, in Modern, Graveyard Hate is pretty good to have. It stops a lot of decks. It gives Pot a really hard time. Gives Malira Pot a really hard time. Storm. I guess it stops Treasure Cruise.
Stops Ascension. Ascension's fucked. Like
Pyromancer Ascension?
Yeah, like that deck doesn't even work if it doesn't have a graveyard. Yeah.
It's very hard for that deck to do anything without a graveyard for sure.
They keep printing these power cards and trying to fix them, and this just doesn't seem like they fixed it well enough.
Seems to be a theme with Wizards, is like printing Power 9 that's varied in some way, and that usually doesn't really turn out that well. Like, last time they printed an Ancestral version that was playable was Ancestral Visions, and that card's banned in Modern, so like, I don't think that this card will be Modern for very long.
So we're thinking of Ban and Modern.
Yeah, definitely a Ban and Modern.
We'll see. Well, I think they'll have to let it play out. I mean, obviously it's doing pretty well in Modern. There's a bunch of blue-red Delver lists now. You know, you just are running all these like cheap cantrips and burn spells, just filling up your graveyard, and then, hey, let me just draw three more cards. So.
Yeah, I've been hearing a lot of people talk about Burn in particular. It seems like Burn is completely shifting away from what they used to be.
I think, like, having an aggressive creature like Delver of Secrets and having access to just refill your hand, like, just playing Mono Red Burn doesn't seem as good as just playing
Blue
Delver. Blue Red Delver, yeah.
Exactly. Having a little protection. Just a few protection packages.
But a lot of Burn decks, though, are going away from actually being Burn, and they're shifting more into Delver.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just because it's a better version of the deck, like,
Why wouldn't you want to play Delver of Secrets if you can? You know?
You can play all the cards you want to out of any competitive burn deck, pretty much any competitive burn deck, and play Delver of Secrets and Treasures.
Really, it probably is just Treasure Cruise is what's fueling that, honestly.
Yeah.
The card is amazing. Also, how about Monastery Swift Spear? That guy is pretty... Well, I'm sorry, that girl is pretty awesome.
She is... I tried to sell off my Goblin Guides, actually, and was pretty unsuccessful. Nobody seems interested in that card right now.
I would say Goblin Guides still very good. I don't think Monastery Swift Spear is better than it in most decks. In a mono red burn deck, I would rather have Goblin Guides than Swift Spears. But yeah, that's
if Swift Spears like kept the counters, like if it kept the +1/+1, then
okay,
it would obviously be stupid. Yeah, it would obviously it wouldn't have been printed.
It would have been printed.
But like I think that's the only way that card is better than Goblin God. Like I think Goblin God is just a more stable card, and the fact that it has, you know, two power constantly makes it, I think, a little bit better than
You can't just throw it out like that. I mean, I don't think it's just well.
I really disagree that Goblin God is better in any manner. Goblin God is more consistent if you have no hand.
Well, there. If it's more consistent, it's more consistent.
Yeah, cards in hand. But Swift Spear, turn one is one damage.
Oh, but you're playing. Sometimes you're just playing suboptimally if you're running Swift Spear. You're playing like maybe you're lightning bolting main phase. You can swing in for an extra point of damage. I mean,
and burn almost everything's going to their face. And I mean, so turn one you swing for one. Turn two, bolt bump, swing for three. You've already caught up to your Goblin Guide.
Fair. Right, but then you could just play Goblin Guide and not have to catch up
to
it.
Yeah, but then the next
turn, you know what I mean?
So like, past Goblin Guide. And then you Treasure Cruise, get all your cards back, and just start this back again.
Oh, that's okay, well, you're playing blue, then you'd probably be playing Swift Spear. So if you're playing Mono Red, Goblin Guide seems to be better. You just answered your own question.
No monocolored decks in Modern are actually monocolored. A Jund had white in it for years. All right. So in Philadelphia on the 25th, we also had Legacy Champs, which got taken down by Blue-Red Delver. In first place, Jeskai Delver. Again, was in second place. Again, in fourth was Jeskai Delver. Sixth was Teemer Delver. And seventh, Sultai Delver. Eighth place was Izzet Delver.
How many copies of Delver are in that top eight?
So there's six Delver decks in the top eight, and every single one of them runs a full playset of Delvers.
Why would you run anything other than a full playset of Delver?
Yes.
So
I made this new blue deck. It's really good. I just run one copy of Delver. See, that's my tech.
So Kevin Jones popped this blue-red Delver deck to first place at the Legacy Open, the Legacy Champs. He's got four Delvers and four Monastery Swift Spears and four Young Pyromancers.
Young,
the really
young
interesting thing about this deck, every creature in it is recent. I mean, we've got Delver of Secrets from Innistrad, Monastery Swift Spear from Khans, and Young Pyromancer from M14.
What up, Tarmogoyf?
So the creatures have already been phased out, and now we're already starting to get into the spells. I mean, obviously they're never going to give us Brainstorm or Daze or anything that powerful. But let's see, we've got Gitaxian Probe is a 4 of. We've got Treasure Cruise as a 4 of. So 8 spells are from within the last few years.
Yeah. Is that list running Thought Scour?
They're not running Thought Scour.
I really like Thought Scour with Treasure Cruise. And Thought Scour is just fun with Brainstorm anyway. A lot of people overlook it. You know, instead of having to fetch away your bad cards, you can just dump them with Thought Scour. So that's pretty cool.
That's pretty interesting, actually.
Yeah.
Alright, and also in the news, the spoilers for the new Commander product, Commander 2014, started coming out. Have you guys gotten a chance to take a look at any of these?
I've seen a couple of them. I haven't seen all of them.
I haven't, yeah.
Right now, as of the 28th, we have a few cards spoiled, a few of the Planeswalkers. We've got Teferi, Temporal Archmage, which I believe everybody's familiar with at this point. Nyxilis of the Black Oath, Freylis, Llanowar's Fury, which is the green one. So we've got the blue, the black, and the green. All these decks are monochrome. Let's see, so Freylis, we've got a 5-mana Planeswalker, 3 green-green, for 3 loyalty counters. Her +2 ability, you put a +1/+1 green elf druid creature token on the battlefield, with tap, add a green to your mana pool. So basically, you get a Llanowar elf. -2, she destroys an enchantment or artifact, and then for -6, she draws a card for each green creature you control.
That is amazing. That is such a good green general. I love it.
It's a really good general. Just being able to drop her out. And the really important thing is, in green, you have access to Doubling Season. So she can actually come down, get her 6 counters, and immediately just sacrifice her.
Draw a ridiculous amount of cards.
Exactly.
I mean, even just coming in and making a Llanowar Elf for it, I mean, like, all of these, I guess Llanowar Elf is, like, the least relevant ability in Commander, but, like, destroying an artifact enchantment in Commander is actually kind of good. Like,
yeah.
Yes. There's a lot of targets for that.
Yeah.
Coming down and blowing up somebody's top. Just, there's always something relevant for her to blow up.
Another doubling season someone else has. Like, it's, enchantments are like the most relevant in Commander, I would say. Like, so I think that's pretty cool.
Oh, no.
I like Planeswalker.
No, I completely agree. My Derevi deck is almost completely based around enchantments.
I mean, there's a lot of commanders that deal with enchantments too that people like to play, so.
So, the black Planeswalker, we have Obnixilus, the Black Oath. It's a 5-mana Planeswalker again. 3 black-black. Comes down with 3 loyalty. +2. Each opponent loses 1 life. You gain a life for each life lost this way. It's -2. You put a 5/5 black demon creature token on a flying with battlefield, and then you lose 2 life. His ultimate ability is -8. You get an emblem with 1 and a black. Sacrifice a creature. You gain X life and draw X cards. Where X is equal to the sacrifice creature's power.
That's a pretty neat emblem. I think, I mean, if you got to the emblem and you're playing mono black commander, you're probably going to just be drawing so many cards with that.
Now, didn't we just have a creature with this ability? I think it was from Innistrad.
You're thinking of Disciple of Bolas?
Yeah, Disciple of Bolas.
And that was from like M13 or something
M13.
It comes in, you sacrifice a creature.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think M13 is the last time that card was printed.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, do either of y'all want to go over to Teferi?
I don't have it up.
Yeah, we can go over to Teferi. I do not have it in my spoiler for some reason, though.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to bring him up.
All right, so I'll go ahead and go over it.
So you just have such a wonderful voice, Ricky.
Yeah, we just want to hear you talk.
I just want to hear you talk.
I really need better friends. So we have Teferi, Temporal Archmage.
He's more expensive than the others.
He is. Not fair. It's 1 mana more, but I think blue probably deserves it. So he's a 6 mana Planeswalker, 4 with blue, comes down with 5 counters. His abilities don't fluctuate quite as much as the others. The others all have +2 and -2. His are +1. Look at the top 2 cards of your library, put one of them into your hand and the other onto the bottom of your library. Then for -1, you can untap up to 4 target permanents. And then for -10, you get an emblem with, you may activate loyalty abilities of planeswalkers you control on any player's turn anytime you cast an instant.
So fun.
So do you get 2 activations then? Can you activate on your turn and their turn?
Yes.
Yep. It's 1 activation per turn, but you can activate as many times as there are turns.
I fucking love this card. And the fact that Teferi makes me really happy because Teferi is like one of my favorites.
He's so cool.
He's one of my favorite cards and favorite characters in the multiverse, so like definitely think it's awesome that Teferi got such a cool card. And I think this is probably the best one so far.
I mean, it's blue, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's blue.
It's a blue magic card, so it's the best.
I think this card is very, very scary in regards to Commander. The -1 coming down and untapping four permanents.
Untap 4 target permanents, that's like infinite mana waiting to happen. Like, that is just value.
-1 is scary as hell.
And also you have to remember, you get to activate the ability after playing the Planeswalker before anybody else can respond.
Yep. Let me untap my counterspell mana.
They can still respond to the activation.
But it goes on the stack.
But
it happens. Yes,
on the stack.
No. Maintaining priority means that ability happens before, right?
No, so you maintain the priority. You pay the cost and put the ability on the stack. Then they can respond in response.
Oh, okay, but sure. The ability still happens? Okay.
Yes.
Look at me being a scrub.
Yeah.
So, his +1 ability, though, I'm not too sure about. It's decent.
What? Look at the top 2 cards. Put one into your hand, the other into your library.
So, his +1 is sleight of hand. Look at the top 2 cards of your library.
Pretty good.
In Commander, though, I really, really wish that second card went to the graveyard.
Well, that would just be broken. That's practically draw 2 in Commander.
It is. I mean, he does have a +1 ability that says draw a card on it.
Yeah. He has 6 mana, but he has 5 loyalty, so, I mean, he's definitely a house.
I do think you'll see this guy outside of him just being a Commander, though.
Okay, Ricky, see, this is where you just take it too far.
No, I'm not talking about being outside of like in Legacy.
Okay.
I mean, I think you will see him.
Yeah, I mean,
in
why
decks
wouldn't
outside
he?
Of it.
Yeah, sure. Because
again, with doubling season, he has that magic number where he comes down with 5 and immediately doubles to match his ultimate cost.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. And that's
and then you probably wouldn't even ultimate him right away. You would just, like, use one of his others. Well, I guess you would.
Yeah, you'd probably just ultimate him right away.
Yeah. I was going to say, yeah, you probably just want that emblem.
Yeah.
All right. Also, with the spoilings, we also have the offering cards. Do one of you guys want to go over some of these?
Offering. Yes. Offering. Let's see, which one do we want to talk about?
Pick one.
Actually, before we do that, I want to talk about Dualcaster Mage.
Dualcaster Mage?
It's like, sorry, Red, we knew Snapcaster was supposed to be your card, but we're going to give you a worse version. Like, I mean, for EDH, he's probably better than Snapcaster, but it's just funny. So, Dualcaster Mage is colorless, double red, flash, human wizard. Never heard that before. But he's a 2/2, and whenever Dualcaster Mage enters the battlefield, copy target instant or sorcery spell, you may choose new targets for the copy. So, pretty cool. Reminds me a lot of Snapcaster, obviously. That was the intention.
He's a neat card. I really, really wish that they had finally given Red their magic 2-drop. Just made it 1 and a red, a 2-1.
Yeah, if he was a 2-drop, he would be disgusting.
He's pushed. He's a 2-2 for 3 in red with flash. The good thing about him, though, is that you don't have to target your own spells. You can target any spell in the stack.
Exactly. That's what pushes him a little bit.
So could you see this card being played, like, in a real format, like in Legacy?
Man, if he was 2 mana...
Oh, if he was 2, then definitely.
Red, he would definitely be, but... For double red and blue, that's a stretch.
Fair enough.
Maybe, I mean, you might be able to see him as sideboard card, you know, against maybe show and tell or something, but...
Copying a show and tell?
Not copying a show and tell, but another big spell.
Okay.
One of the cards I really like out of this set is the Reform. I really like that card. When I saw it, I was like, that card is really cool.
It's so flavorful.
It is so flavorful, and I love it so much.
I can taste it.
You can. Tastes like worms.
So,
go ahead, Ricky. Go ahead.
I am probably, I don't know. You would call me janky.
Go ahead, Ricky.
You are janky.
But any effect that doubles tokens coming onto the battlefield makes this card absolutely absurd.
It's true.
So he dies, you get 2 3/3s. Those 2 3/3s turn into 4 6/6s. The 4 6/6s turn into 8 9/9 krakens.
Yeah, that's a lot of stuff.
That seems good.
Seems hard to lose.
I think without one of those effects, bounce spells are really good.
Yeah.
Bounce spells make this card look really bad, but I think it's a cool
they
card.
Should have given it the Thragtusk treatment.
Oh god.
That would have been fun. Oh man.
So
honestly, none of the other spoilers have like really been awesome looking to me. I guess the red general, Feldon of the Third Path. I really like him.
He's a neat card. A lot of flavor there.
Yeah. Speaking of Feldon and his deck, we have a new reprint. Wormcoil Engine just got announced.
We actually have another reprint that's really important, and that is Tuk Tuk the Explorer.
Tuk Tuk.
Sorry, but Wormcoil Engine. Let's go back to that.
Wormcoil Engine is a huge reprint.
Yeah, what is that sitting at now? I haven't even checked.
It's dropped quite a bit.
From the announcement?
No, it was actually steadily going down to this.
Sure. So yeah, it's about $20 mid right now. 21. 20, 21.
The question is this going to be in one deck? Because if it's in one deck, then that deck's going to be hard to get.
Depends on which deck it's in, though.
The rares and mythics are always in one deck. The uncommons are in two, and the commons are in all four.
Okay. Swarm Coil's in one deck. I just assume it's in the red deck. I don't know if it is. It probably is. It makes the most sense.
They also gave us a very interesting teaser with the germ token.
Yeah, Last Wreath.
Have they spoiled Last Wreath?
I think so. They haven't officially spoiled it, but there's like a... someone posted the full black deck and it was in there.
Oh.
And then it got taken down.
Well then.
Well, that takes all the excitement out of that.
Yes, it does.
Sorry, Batterskull, you're going to have to wait your turn.
I mean, you have to realize, though, they are making a Modern Masters 2. There's no way they're not going to do that.
I mean, why would they turn down money?
So they do have to save some of their bombs, I suppose.
I mean, it's just they could have printed them anyways in Commander, and there's plenty of stuff in Modern that they could put in Modern Masters 2.
Yeah, like two types of Tarmogoyf.
Yeah, that would be great.
Just print Tarmogoyf twice as a rare and an uncommon.
There you go.
Tarmogoyf facing the left and Tarmogoyf facing the right.
Yep. There you go.
Old art and new art.
Laffy Taffy Goyf.
Do it.
So, the printing of that card is interesting, though, because the monocolor decks, it feels like they're printing cards they know the power level of to avoid another issue like True Name Nemesis.
You don't think they're going to... I mean...
I don't think they're going to print anything in a commander deck like that again that's that pushed.
I think they will.
I think they will, too.
I think this is the wrong spot for them to do it, because...
In order to print more of that deck...
They print all five of them, and then only
one
of themselves.
They're not doing that anymore, right? No. Aren't they printing them individually now, or...?
Are they?
Well, because the last little bit, you could get two Mind Seizes on a deck, so... Or in a package.
But for every two they sold, they still printed four of the others.
I don't know.
I think you'll start seeing pushed cards like that more so in made-up decks, like the Duel deck. So, the Offering cards that they spoiled are pretty interesting. The one that really caught my eye was Infernal Offering.
I do like that one.
It's four and a black. It's a sorcery, unfortunately. Do you want to go over that one, Willie?
Sure. Like you said, four and a black, Infernal Offering. Choose an opponent. You and that player each sacrifice a creature. Each player who sacrificed a creature this way draws two cards. Next, your second, choose an opponent. Return a creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield. Then that player returns a creature card from his or her graveyard to the battlefield. So you choose an opponent. You and that opponent sacrifice a creature, draw two cards, and then you choose another opponent, or the same opponent, it just says choose an opponent, and then you both reanimate.
That's pretty cool.
I like that you can choose two different people, just like piss people off. It's like, choose you, sacrifice your creature, but then I'm going to choose you, and you can't return your creature that you just sacrificed to draw a card.
Yeah.
I like it.
So, I mean, technically you could sack the creature and then bring it right back, but in actuality you're basically just... paying five mana to draw two cards.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you would do that, but
you're gonna play this to upgrade your creature.
Yeah,
and then with one in your graveyard, and possibly get somebody to sacrifice a creature that you really can't deal with any other way.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is gonna be a cool thing about like the offering cards is it's very good for forming those little alliances in Commander games, which I think makes Commander a lot more fun. So you can be like, all right, who wants three creatures like the white one, or who wants, you know, to draw two cards and just pitch a random creature away, or who wants to reanimate something? And like, I think that is the most fun about Commander is interacting with the other players, and I think they get that.
You want to go over the white one since you just mentioned it?
Yeah, sure. So, Malevolent Offering is three and a white. It's an instant. The other one was a sorcery. So it says, choose an opponent. You and that opponent each put three 1/1 white spirit tokens with flying onto the battlefield. And then you choose an... The second part is choose an opponent. You gain two life for each creature you control, and that player gains two life for each creature they control.
That card is going to be so awesome in Commander.
Yeah.
It's just like two fuck yous.
And pretty much, I mean, you're helping someone out. Like, the other one, there was a clear... drawback on one side, which is you sacrifice the creature. This one, no, you're just like getting three dudes, you know, two people are getting three dudes and two people are gaining three life, bunch of life, so.
A whole bunch of life.
Well, if you target an opponent who doesn't have any creatures with the second ability, they don't get to gain anything.
Well, they're losing anyway.
Yeah, they're losing. You're probably not worried about them.
Well, it always seems like in Commander, though, there's that one player that's kind of sitting over in the corner there not really doing anything, and everybody's kind of ignoring them.
That's me, and that is a great thing.
Keep ignoring that player.
Keep ignoring that player, and we will always kill you, I promise. You should never ignore that player, really.
Okay, so the last of the spoilers that I want to go over, if you guys have any that you want to point out, feel free. The last one I really wanted to touch on was Titania, Protector of Argoth. Did you guys see this?
No.
No.
Oh, yes.
All right, so it's Titania, Protector of Argoth, 3 green-green for a legendary creature elemental. When Titania, Protector of Argoth enters the battlefield, return target land card from your graveyard to the battlefield, and whenever a land you control is put into the graveyard from the battlefield, put a 5/3 green elemental creature token onto the battlefield. She is a 5/3.
Thraktusk.
Everything that's 5/3 and green is not a Thraktusk.
Yeah, it's 5 mana, too.
She's a pretty scary creature. Bringing the land back, that's absurd.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely absurd. And
with fetch lands, oh my gosh.
Oh.
Well, fetch lands, strip mine.
Yeah, that card's going to be so good in EDH.
I'm really glad this isn't like multicolored, though, because you could really do some stupid stuff with this if it was, like, green, white, or...
Oh, yeah. You're saying, like, if you use it as your commander?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That card's would be really, really good if it was...
I wish this card was, like, 4 mana, so they really pushed it so you could try to play it in, like, a Nick Fit shell in Legacy.
That would be fun.
I mean, I think, or in a Jund, you could probably play in a Jund list or something.
That would be fun.
I mean, oh, that would be so good. Just play it, get back a Wasteland, oh gosh, and then Wasteland and get another 5/3, the card would just be, oh man, so many dirty things. Man, even at 5 mana, it might, well, it's legendary, I don't know. I like it. I like the card a lot.
Card is really strong. I actually don't own any commander decks that are less than 3 colors. And that card kind of makes me want to build a mono green.
Yeah, monocolor commander decks are actually a lot of fun to build.
Yeah.
One card I wanted to talk about really quickly, if we could, is Malicious Affliction. I think this card is probably one of the better cards that has been printed so far and has potential to see play in other formats.
I agree.
Malicious Affliction, it's 2 black mana. It's an instant. It has Morbid, which is, if a creature has died, its Morbid ability is, when you cast Malicious Affliction, if another creature has died this turn, you may copy Malicious Affliction and choose new targets for it. And it's just terror. Well, not terror. Destroy target non-black creature. So it might, like, this card's pretty good. Well, like, I feel like 2 things for 2 black mana.
I think it is a good card. I think it's a great card. I think the only issue I have with it is, again, you know, playing around Morbid sometimes leads to really bad lines of play. You, like, are getting a little greedy with it, but I think just holding it and you can being able to possibly get a 2-for-1 is pretty disgusting.
I think the Morbid ability could be considered a trap. Like,
yeah.
You can mess yourself up. Yeah, you can. Morbid can be a trap. We saw it with Tragic Slip. It can just happen.
It can just get you there. Yeah.
It can just make something really good. And
considering,
like,
this turns it into a 2-for-1, it's pretty disgusting. Like, Tragic Slip was still just, you know, 1-for-1. It was just making it a better removal spell. But
right,
this one, yeah, I like this one.
I think this one is probably, of the new cards printed, has the most chance to see play in Legacy. Double
black is pretty tough, though.
In Legacy?
I would say.
You could play this in a... You could find a place for this card.
For sure. But I'm just trying to think. Most black decks are, like, Bug, and they want more. Well, I guess a lot of them... Well, they play Run, Hymn to Torok, so... Yeah, this would be fine.
One card that's really interesting. Wake the Dead. So an X spell for black-black... It's an instant. Cast it only during combat on opponent's turn. You return X target creature cards from your graveyard to the battlefield, and then you sacrifice those creatures at the beginning of the next end step.
Gosh. Yeah.
Commander, this card is awesome.
Yeah. You get a bunch of enter the battlefield effects.
Yeah.
GG.
X spells are usually a lot better in Commander.
Yeah.
Yeah, this card is going to be one of those cards you definitely want to try to find a copy of. Like, it's going to be one of those cards you kind of are going to want to play with. So.
Like, there's a lot of situations where you can put cards in your graveyard and assemble an entire combo just sitting there. And then somebody goes to swing at you, you pop this off for 5, and then instantaneously you have your entire combo assembled.
Sure.
The creatures don't have haste, though, so
they
that's
don't.
Relevant. You can't use, like, tap abilities.
Or
anything like that.
All right, Ricky, how can you jank this up? What creature are you going to pull out to give all your creatures haste?
Well, no, I'm not saying anything like that. But I'm saying, like, let's take my favorite deck, Malira Pod. You pull out Malira, Kitchen Finks, and any sac outlet, and then instantaneously you have infinite life. Or if you get a red cap, they're all just dead.
So are you saying, yeah, that's true.
That's pretty cool.
What you have to also remember about this card, most cards that act like this, the creatures get exiled at the end of turn. This one puts a trigger on them, and then you sacrifice them. In Commander, you could do stupid things like Time Stop, or, I mean, in real formats, the creatures
Commander
are still there.
Commander is a real format.
Okay, I probably shouldn't say that on the air. We'll get hate mail our first episode.
It's going to happen anyways, No one likes us already.
Oh, now I don't feel loved.
You shouldn't. Ricky, I guess it's kind of important to point out that that whole, like, spiel you went on about variants of different modern decks that reanimate card can go into, you can't play these cards in modern.
No, you can't. But I was just giving an example of a combo that you can strip from your graveyard.
Sure.
And instantaneously combo off.
There's plenty of them.
So Let's look at a format you can play it in. Let's take a look at Legacy.
Legacy. So,
I did not expect that to turn into a 45-minute conversation on Commander.
Hey, you know what? That was still kind of interesting that we talked about spoilers. I like spoilers.
Who doesn't?
Everybody loves spoilers.
What did you say?
So for the
who doesn't love spoilers?
If you don't like spoilers.
Your car, they add like 5 horsepower to your car.
They do.
Wow.
It's true. I don't care if you don't think it is. It's true. You actually become faster when you add.
Faster, stronger, spoiler. Better.
Yep. All those things. All
right. So going to the last Legacy Open on the 26th?
Yes.
Can we just talk about fourth place deck, Slivers? I love him. Blake.
So the first deck that we go over on our podcast is going to be quite possibly the jankiest thing in the world, Slivers.
Oh, okay. What do you want to talk about then, Richard?
No, I would love to talk about Slivers. Wow. All right. Willie, do you want to go over this deck list?
No.
I don't, actually.
I just like the deck. I was just saying I like the deck. Sure.
Okay.
Fine, I'll go over it. All right. So we have the Meat Hooks Sliver deck. So it plays a lot like Merfolk or just any sort of aggro deck. This has got a little more... this one plays a lot like Merfolk because you have your Aether Vials. You're going to Aether Vial in all your Slivers, your awesome Slivers. You have Crystalline Sliver, 4 of those. That gives all your Slivers Shroud, Gale Rider Sliver. All your Sliver creatures have Flying. It also does a Wing Sliver, which is the same thing, just for one more mana. You also got Sinew Sliver. All your Slivers get +1/+1, so that's a Lord. You also have Predatory Sliver, another Lord. Muscle Sliver, another Lord. And then Hibernation Slivers, pay 2 life. All your Slivers have pay 2 life. Return this permanent to its owner's hand, so there's a little more protection. But those are all your Slivers. So you have Slivers that give your other Slivers flying. Then you have a ton of Lords. They all just get really big really quick. And you're playing them for free with your Aether Vial, or you're playing them uncounterable through Cavern of Souls, which is pretty awesome because the mana base sometimes in a Sliver stack gets kind of out of control. But it also helps that he's running Sliver Hive, which is the new land just printed in 15. You can tap to add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool and spend this mana only to cast a Sliver spell. So you have all the mana you need. This deck I really like because it's running Brainstorm, Daze, and Force of Will. So it's playing a lot like a Merfolk deck, just with some keeping up some counter magic to protect your Slivers while you're just getting in for the beats. Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty strong. But yeah, that's all I really want to say about that. I just think it's pretty cool, you know?
I do really like the 4 of Mutavault.
Oh yeah, again, Mutavault. And you get evasion. You know, Merfolk, you know, will have Island Walk, and islands are played quite frequently in Legacy, so you get to swing in for free. But in this one, you're giving all your Slivers flying, so very easily you can get some evasion and go swinging in.
I think the sideboard for this deck's pretty cool, too.
You want to go over that?
Yeah, sure. So the sideboard is 2 Relic of Progenitus, and there's 2 in the main deck also. There's 3 Darkheart Slivers, which is a green-black 2-2. All Slivers have Sacrifice this creature, you gain 3 life, so it's obviously good against really aggressive or burn strategies. Harmonic Sliver, which is 1, a green, and a white. It's a 1-1, and all of your creatures become naturalizes, basically. Mm-hmm. You can, when it comes into play, you naturalize something, so mm-hmm. That's good. Sower of Temptation is also in this deck, and I love that card. So I think it's really cool at this point. That Flusterstorm, 2 Flusterstorms, it's pretty obvious for that score, and 3 Thalias, which I think... Yeah, it's super cool. You could totally...
Because you're mostly playing creatures, so might as well drop a Thalia in there.
I mean, you have the mana base to support it, so why not play Thalia? So, like, this is a Bant deck all the way, so people should understand that. But having access to Thalia, I think, makes this deck kind of cool post-board.
It's true. I agree. And earlier we talked about Relic of Progenitus, and having 2 of these in the main board completely destroys Treasure Cruise, so...
Yeah.
Pretty cool. I think he might have been playing off of that a little bit.
Well, I mean, if you look at the decks that were below him, actually... You've got Storm in 6th place, Reanimator in 7th, and Blue-Red Delver with a full play set of Treasure Cruises in the main.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, for sure. I think that's one reason for playing the 2 in the main deck is because Treasure Cruise is going to be a big deal, and like, if they're not playing Treasure Cruise, they're probably playing something that interacts with the graveyard. So like, having 2 in the main deck is good, but I couldn't see playing 4 card like that against just with Treasure Cruise in it, because I think you're just watering down your deck too much against one card.
Seems fair.
Fair.
So I think this deck's pretty cool. If I had a set of forces or access to a set of forces, set forces are really the big thing, the fetch lands, I guess, but you can play
you could other... play shocks too, yeah, instead could, of the duels.
You could figure something out, but I think this would be a really cool deck to play in a Legacy tournament.
I agree.
Seems fair. And I mean, you really only have three duels in the deck. You've got one Underground Sea, one Tundra, one Trop.
Which is really just for the, I guess, well, I mean, it helps out, but you could get away, I think, with running. If you had the fetches, you could run, probably run just, I guess you might as well just run the shocks. I was going to say just the basics, but.
No, I think the deck is far too mana hungry for that.
Well, I mean, you have four caverns and four sliver, or you could run four sliver hives and that's eight, whatever you need, so I think that's what saves the deck a bit.
It's kind of interesting that they have a land that specifically works just for them.
What do you mean?
The Sliver Hive.
Sliver Hive, yeah.
I think that's awesome. Having a card like Sliver Hive obviously makes a deck like this a lot more possible, and that's a good thing.
All right, so we'll keep that short and sweet. There's not much to that deck.
Yeah.
Just slivers.
Who doesn't like talking about slivers?
Well, people might like talking about it, but I don't know if people like playing against slivers.
I will tell you my first ever, back in the day, and when slivers were around in Onslaught, that was my first ever FNM victory was with the slivers deck. Five color slivers. I was like 12 or something.
Speaking of which, what have you guys been up to in Magic?
Not playing a whole lot of Magic right now, but trying to finish up my Legacy stuff. Get my fetches.
You finally got your Force of Wills?
I've had Forces. I've had my Forces.
They're nice too, Ricky.
They're
nice.
Minty. Minty.
Yeah. Dinty nice.
Dinty nice.
Have you guys ever used Puka Trade?
No. You Puka never what?
I don't like Pokemon like that. I mean, I like the video games, but like, I don't play.
I don't think I'd play. I don't think I. I don't have Pokemon cards to trade for Magic cards.
No. Puka. P-U-C-A trade.
Whoa, you're gonna have to bleep that one out.
Yeah.
So I've been on this site for about a week and a half, 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Been sending out cards. And finally got my return yesterday, actually.
What have you been trading?
I was trading away different things. Things that I'm kind of just extra stuff, Noble Hierarchs and whatnot. Finally got in the mail, though. A guy sent me a Tropical Island.
How?
I mean, you made it trade
it up?
Yeah, I had enough points for it. Yeah, so every card you send out. Yep.
How does that work? Like, so you got it for free, or?
Sort of. I sent out Noble Hierarch, and I got 7,500 points for my Noble Hierarch.
That's all you get? Like, so you're pretty much converting your cards into an online currency that either you can then use to buy.
Yes.
To buy other cards. That's scary to me.
It's a little bit, but I mean, in Ox Valley, really, I give away like 10 cards to like 10 different people, and then in exchange, one person gave me a card. So it was like a way to trade within the community.
That's a cool idea.
It's been around
I've never done it.
I've heard of it before.
That's a really cool idea. I've never used that though.
I might use that actually. I might trade away some jank. Will people take my jank for points? Yeah.
It goes fast though. So like as soon as people stick stuff up, a lot of times it's only up there for a couple minutes. I timed it earlier. What did I put in here? Let's see. Trades, active. I was messing around seeing how quickly things would go. I stuck in here a foil Rescue of the Underworld. That took 23 seconds before somebody committed to sending it to me. And then right after that I stuck a Chain Veil up and it took 15 seconds before somebody sent that to me. So I mean, especially stuff from the current set goes really quick.
But yeah, people are putting jank up here.
Yes, people love stuff like that. I mean, it's a great place. If you need to build an EDH deck, it's the perfect thing in the world for it. Right now, I'm sending out, I've got two cards I need to mail out tomorrow. One is a Karanos and one is a True Name Nemesis. It's fun.
A little free plug for those guys.
Yeah.
A little free plug for Puka Trade.
Check it out.
Alright, guys.
Okay.
Anything else you want to talk about?
I have one thing really quick I'd like to talk about. Do you know the card Norn the Wary? You guys know that card?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Old Norn.
This is for both you guys. This is a question for both you guys. Who do you think would win in a drinking contest, Norn the Wary or Ricky?
Oh, jeez. Well, I think if you could get up to Norn without him running away, I think he would beat Ricky in a drinking contest.
Do you think that Norn would definitely run away?
He would run away. That's the only problem.
I don't like this idea. I have a bad feeling about this.
Ricky the Wary.
A four of Norn the Wary is $20? What the hell?
I think he's a general.
He is.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny. Ricky, who do you think you could beat Norn the Wary in a drinking contest?
I mean, all I have to do is look at him, right?
Well, I mean, let's say that he already had a couple shots of tequila in him, right?
Tequila.
He's feeling a little bit more brave, a little bit less wary, right?
Warren the slightly cautious.
Yeah, and you even got a head start. He's got two shots of booze in him.
Yeah, but Ricky, but then we bring out the Miller Lite, and you crack it open, and you smell it, and you're already feeling a little tipsy.
How many beers do you think you could drink before Norn the Wary taps out?
I don't even know what you guys are talking about.
Ricky, please leave this in. Can we have a section devoted to us talking about you in a drinking game against Magic Cards?
I think that's a great idea. I think we're just going to make that a part of the show. And we're just going to try.
All right, now, this week in Ricky versus the Magic Card.
Oh, God. I need better friends.
I think you have really great friends who just love you so much that we feel the obligation to torment you about how little you can drink.
Whoa. Judge Foil, Force Wills are 72,000 Puka points.
72,000. Well, each point is about a penny.
Okay.
No.
So, like, right now I have 26,000 points. So it's about $260.
Okay. That's cool. Yeah. How much could I get for a Mach Sapphire? How many points? How much for a beat up unlimited Mach Sapphire?
Mach Sapphire?
20 points.
20 points. Alright, cool.
Well, they really let you trade near mint stuff on there.
Yeah.
You can, like, talk to people. But they actually just had their first mocks get traded.
Oh, yeah?
So, let's see. Ooh, God. So, an unlimited Mach Sapphire near mint on here is 208,000 points.
Nice.
So, moxes and trades aside, we really need to wrap this up. I'd like to thank everybody for coming out today. If you need to get in touch with us, you can reach us at T4KPodcast. That's the letter T, the number 4, the letter K, podcast on Twitter, or T4KPodcast@gmail.com.
They didn't go anywhere, Ricky.
They didn't go anywhere, Ricky.
I wasn't talking to them. I was talking to you.
We didn't go anywhere either.
I'm still sitting here.
Oh, are you not over? Okay. Well, y'all aren't doing that weird thing where y'all, like, bunk up for the podcast?
No, we do that on Sundays.